Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Fan Junkies Radio. As always, I am your host, Jonathan Ragus, and alongside me, my co-host, Mike McShane. Mike, how you doing, pal?
Fantastic, Jonathan. I'm sitting here, I'm having a little lunch, little broiled catfish.
What are you eating while you're on air?
Yeah, catfish, right?
Come on, man, be professional. Nobody has ever eaten on air unless you're Keith Hernandez. Come on. No, I hear you, man. I eat on air, too. I mean, it's lunchtime.
Lunchtime, and the special today was, like I said, a little broiled catfish.
I don't know, man. What, are you living down in Louisiana today?
Reference?
Okay.
Yes.
All right. We got a good show today, Mike.
Yeah.
We have a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking about liars. We're going to be talking about cheaters. We're going to be talking about people who love to deceive. After we talk about all of that stuff, we have a really good guest today.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with that. Want to make sure we put it out there. We're actually going to be joined by owner of Five Star Basketball Camps, Lee Klein.
Yeah.
He's going to be called in at around the 12:15 mark, and we're going to be talking about who the player of the year is, mid-major tourneys. We're going to be talking a lot college basketball.
Yes.
We're going to find out what is five-star basketball king.
Yep.
And Lee's going to explain that to our listeners, so tune in for that. That's going to be a really, really good interview here on Fan Junkies Radio.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's right in my wheelhouse.
I know you're happy about it right now.
Listen, I really get into it, and this is the time of year. Last night's 5 minutes at the Pratt House, we actually started getting into, and this is about the right time for us.
Yeah.
We started getting into covering a little bit of NBA basketball, and of course now also I start jumping in on the college round ball. And college hoops to me is just fabulous. It's so pure. To me, it's the purest form of basketball is to watch college basketball. And that's, like I said, that's right in my wheelhouse.
Well, to me, the purest form of basketball is, watching courtyard ball, but that's me. City boy.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I mean, from Philadelphia. I mean, I'm from Philadelphia. I mean, that's where a lot of it gets started.
Oh yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. It should be a good one.
It's definitely going to be a good one. But let's get right into it. We have a lot to talk about today. It's going to seem like a lot, but it's really not because we're only going to talk about two or three things today.
Yeah,
but there's so much going around it
that
we just have to talk about it, Mike.
Yeah.
And the first thing we're going to really touch base on here is the whole Notre Dame thing, Manti Te'o, his fake girlfriend, fake dead girlfriend, invisible woman, blow-up doll, who knows what she is. it's been a couple of days now, Mike. And, trying to wrap my head around all of this information. First of all, we have to say what a phenomenal, phenomenal job from Timmy Burke and Jack Dickey over at Deadspin.
Yeah.
Really blowing this up. Yeah, amazing investigative reporting from them over at Deadspin. Here's the facts that we know. Manti Te'o, Notre Dame player, probably going to be a top 15 pick in the draft. And just a few weeks ago, his grandmother passes away. At the same time his grandmother passes away, his girlfriend passes away tragically. Now what we know is the girlfriend never existed. People are in hiding. Notre Dame was lying through their teeth in their press conference just a couple of nights ago. And we're all confused. Mike, from what you're reading from all of this stuff, from what you've heard, where is this sitting with you?
It's without a doubt one of the most, and I mean, I've, God knows, I've been around and watched and covered a lot of stories. This one was without a doubt the most bizarre type of story that I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yes.
You've covered it. You've covered it with a broad brush, but when you start to dig down underneath of it all, let's not forget this was apparently a, I want to say a woman, but this was apparently a relationship that this that this young man started way back in 2009.
Yeah.
So it's 3 years. 3 years. And according to the athletic director of Notre Dame, apparently the two never met. It was online only via Twitter, I guess mostly. Perhaps maybe Facebook. I'm not sure if Facebook was involved in it or not, but I know Twitter was. You know, it leads to a lot of questions. A lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole concept of catfishing. Well, you know, I brought up, and that was my reference. You know, this apparently is a, you know, this is apparently a type of hoaxing. This whole concept of catfishing. It all comes out of that that documentary that was done, and now there's an MTV program on where there are numerous people that are getting duped out there. You know, and we've heard about this kind of thing for many years now.
Well, yeah.
With the onslaught of the internet and social media, where people are ghosting and cloaking themselves.
Well, not even. It's called catfishing, so it's basically what you're eating for lunch right now, Mike.
That's why I was saying that's what I was having for lunch, right? But it's a bizarre story, John. And I mean, I just don't know where to go with it. We brought it up on last night's 5 minutes at the Pratt House, and I couched it by saying, you know, I think, you know, we're probably going to reserve some judgment on this because we're still waiting for more information to come out. The athletic director, in his hastily and frenzied kind of press conference at Notre Dame, put out there on, when was it, Wednesday night, as the story broke, which I found very, very interesting, that Notre Dame felt that they had to respond immediately by having a press conference called at like 7 o'clock in the evening.
Oh, and it was almost immediately. Like,
yeah,
seriously.
I mean,
yeah.
And really, all that did was just give credence to the Deadspin article.
Well, because they knew Deadspin hit it
right on.
You know, right on.
Yeah.
You know?
So, you know, the athletic director indicated there that we will hear from Tao at some point. He had indicated that potentially we may have heard from him as early as yesterday. That didn't occur.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, I have actually heard reports that Tao will speak, but are you ready? And I don't know whether you've heard this one or not. He's going to do it on an Oprah program.
Well, from what we heard, yeah, because now Notre Dame is out of it. They're not able to book anything for Tao. He signed with the, I can't remember the agency, the CAA agency or something like that. Now he can be paid for interviews.
Oh.
So, of course, you know he's going to sign with an Oprah. He's going to sign with a Barbara Walters. He's going to sign with somebody because he's going to want to get paid over this. But that makes it worse.
It does. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. It actually puts more of a taint on the whole thing.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
You know, now I raised the questions last night. Again, I want to couch this by saying, you know, reserving judgment. I'm going to reserve judgment. But as you watch, here's a question I'm going to throw at you, Jonathan, real quick.
Shoot.
Consider for a moment he came in second for the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah.
Okay? And we were talking about this a month ago, back in the beginning of December. And I said at that point, I said I really kind of thought that he would have been the hands-on favorite. One, because I didn't think Johnny Manziel would win it because he was a freshman. And it had never gone to a freshman.
But you did say that, yes.
But I thought that Manti might get it. And I said, when was the last time we saw a defensive player get it? And you went back and did the research on it, and it was something ridiculous like 40 or 50 years ago.
Yeah.
Who decides, who votes the Heisman? Answer me that question.
Honestly, I have no idea.
It's the writers.
Okay.
Okay? Now, consider for a moment. What do writers like? We like good stories, don't we?
They like dirt.
We like good stories, don't we? We like feel-good stories.
Yeah.
And here's this kid coming out and saying, my grandmother died, and the very next day, my girlfriend of 3 years, who was only 22 years old, she died of leukemia after being in a car accident, you know, months before that. Oh, my God. We bought into that hook, line, and sinker, didn't we?
Yeah.
And, you know, consider for a moment, the media ran with this story. Nobody did their checking on the front end.
Nobody did.
SI was buying into it. SI bought into it. CBS Sports bought into it. The South Bend Courier, according to Deadspin, had been running with this story for months out of the Notre Dame area.
Yes.
Nobody did their checking on the front end. Who votes on the Heisman? It's the writers. And if the writers look at this and go, oh my gosh, look at this guy. What a story he is. All the things he's had to play with, and he's put on a performance like this year. So it leads you to start to question, was this all part of a manipulative plot in order to get writers to swing his way to get votes for the Heisman? It starts to make you wonder that. It starts to make you wonder things like, was this an attempt to position him better in the upcoming NFL draft?
Yeah.
I mean, look.
Well, who knows? I honestly, to try to wrap your hands around it, you could come up with so many conclusions or, you know, proposed conclusions of what this story is going to be at the end. That's definitely one, Mike. I mean, absolutely. That is a good conclusion you have there. But at the same time, what else is going on here? You know what I mean? Could it have been that? Was it to sway votes his way for the Heisman?
Well,
was it to cover up something even bigger?
Well, and here's another question, too, that I would throw out there. Again, I don't want people to get the impression that I'm rushing to judgment.
These are all opinions. That's all they are.
Well, they're questions. They're speculations. Why? Why did Notre Dame feel the need to immediately go out and get a private investigator to look into this?
Well, not only that, if it's such a big thing and they want to show his innocence, why? When I can't remember his name, the athletic, what was it, like Jack Swarbuck?
Yeah, I
like
forget.
That?
You're right. Something
yeah.
about it, right.
So his first thing was when a reporter asked him, well, after the investigation is done, will you be releasing it to the public? No, we won't be. Right away, red flag.
Well, here was another red flag during that press conference.
Well, there was a lot of red flags during the press conference.
Oh, yeah. I believe you watched it live streamed as I did as well.
Yes.
Another red flag that jumped out to me was when someone asked, you know, what, if any, potential NCAA repercussions there potentially could be. And he was right on it, and he said, we looked into that immediately. We checked into that, and technically, no, there should not be any reason for the NCAA to get involved.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There's a lot of things, too, because here it comes out, this girl is dead. No, this girl is fake. And then former Arizona Cardinals fullback Reagan Mauia comes out and says, no, she's not fake. I met her. I met her face to face. I know her. And then who basically introduced them was that same guy that's connected to Manti Te'o and this supposed Lene Kakua. And what the heck is his name? Ronea Tuasasopo.
Right.
So he basically introduced Reagan Mauia to her as well.
Right.
When he was down in Hawaii doing some charity with some other football players and stuff. You know, all of a sudden, that put a whole new spin on it. So now, is this girl fake, or is she not fake? You know?
Well, I think, though, the fact that you've got the middleman there kind of in control of both sides, that is, both parties.
And now he's in hiding.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. I mean, it raises even more questions about collusion, conspiracy, you know. You know, I made the comment last night on 5 Minutes.
Yeah.
You know, Manti Te'o is, how old is he? Maybe 21? Maybe 22?
22.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying it's impossible that he couldn't be duped. I'm sure it could be. Look, you know, I made the comment to Sidekick. We're talking about a generation here, these younger folks, a generation now that has been raised on the internet, raised on social media.
Absolutely.
You know, my generation, who are 30 years older than that, we're a lot more guarded.
Yes.
All right. So I'm not saying it's impossible that he couldn't have been. He may actually be an absolute victim here. It is very, very possible.
Oh, yeah,
but
absolutely.
There are just some things that just don't, I just can't connect the dots on everything yet.
There's going to be a lot of this coming out over the next bunch of days, over the
yep.
next bunch of weeks, at the end of February when he supposedly might speak at the combine. So, you know, patience.
I'm going to tell you, it's going to make for an interesting draft.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But, like you said, very weak draft class. Is this another thing to hype this draft class now, too?
Well, it certainly, I mean, the fact that it's weak is probably going to support him. But I'm going to tell you, I don't think you're going to see him necessarily go in the top 15.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either. Honestly, I didn't see him going into the top 15 beforehand.
Well, I did. He was originally projected to go in the top 5. But then after the BCS game, his stock tumbled, and in mock draft, I saw him actually going somewhere between 10 and 15.
Yeah, not even that. I mean, if you look at a lot of projected drafts, you see that offensive tackles, quarterbacks, running
yeah.
backs, defensive ends, you don't see many linebackers there. So that was the reason why I didn't think he was going to go top 15. But we'll get back to this in a little while, because joining us right now is our guest, and it's Lee Klein, who is a former assistant at Texas and Rhode Island and now owns five-star basketball camps. Lee, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. How are we doing today?
Real good, Lee. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Lee, for our listeners, before we get into anything and any big questions, tell our listeners, what is five-star basketball camp all about?
Well, five-star basketball camp is the place for your development. And so for 48 years, we've had kids that have been passionate about the game that have come through to want to get to their next level. For 400 of those cases, that was the NBA, whether it's been a guy like Michael Jordan or LeBron James or Kevin Durant or Chris Paul, all during different times of their development, coming through five-star and then utilizing that, getting better and using that platform to get to on their way to where they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And on the coaching side, we've been a cradle of coaches. A lot of guys passionate about the game have come through five-star and have emerged as some of the top coaches in America. And whether it's been a Brad Stevens who came to five-star when he was volunteering for Carmel High School, or John Gross when he was a Division II guy at Taylor University, or John Calipari when he was playing at Clarion University, and been on their way ever since.
How many, Lee? How many participants do you have involved in this per year?
I'm sorry, say it one more time. How many
participants do you have? How many
participants?
How many?
People. Yeah, we'll have about 10,000 kids go through a five-star experience, whether it be a clinic or a camp, at some point, each year.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll span everything from the kid who wants to make his high school team to a kid at Super Session that's being recruited by a number of Division I colleges.
And the camps are spotted, what, around the country?
Yes, 12 to 15 different regions throughout throughout the world will have camp, and outside of having camp here, all throughout the country would be New York, Dallas, Chicago, Orlando, California. We'll also have camp in Australia, England, Greece, and amongst other places. So we'll have a lot of kids from all over the world coming through, living the dream, trying to get their game to the next level.
Who would be the biggest? Now you started this in what year? Was it 94?
Well, the camp started in 66. My dad
okay.
started the camp in 1966 with Howie Garfinkel, and lo and behold, Hubie Brown, Chuck Daly, these guys are some of the original staff members, and it took off from there. I was involved, ever since I was a kid. But in 94, I made the commitment to get back and to try and take the camp to preserve the legacy and take it to the next level and to and branch out. We used to be in just three little locations, to branch out and bring it to more regional base, and now have kids from Texas, giving them an opportunity to go somewhere and develop, and kids in Georgia and so on.
Throw us one or two names, or three maybe, that our listeners would know that you would consider to be the greatest success stories coming out of this.
There's always, when you talk about success, you got to look at the paradigm. I mean, success could be the kid who came into camp who, had nothing, had no scholarship, was doubting himself, and then ended up being a kid that got a scholarship. I mean, Michael Jordan, when he came to camp, it was not rated by anybody. So when Michael Jordan came to camp, he was not in anyone's top 100.
Yeah.
After one day at five-star, he emerged as the number one player in the country. Okay, so there's nothing that compares to that. That was a turning point, as he says, in his life, and really making a commitment to basketball, and he showed in an incredibly talented week where, you know, where he stood and what his talent was. So, I mean, that would be the ultimate story of emergence. Then you have, you know, Chris Paul was playing JV basketball, came to five-star after his sophomore season. And nobody knew, especially on the national level, how good Chris Paul was. He played in our middle division. Three leagues he played in the second division, was an all-star, was a standout.
Mm-hmm.
By the time he came back the following summer, he had an incredible varsity season as a junior. And by the time he came back and went to five-star the following June, where he dominated the camp, he then put himself to be the number one point guard in the country.
Wow.
Those are two, you know, those are two, as far as two superstars in comparing it there, but there's a thousand success stories from all different levels.
Sure.
That happened.
Sure.
The I'll give you one more. Just being in, you know, I'm here in New York. Carmelo Anthony, I remember the day. Mike Daniel from Towson Catholic called me to get two players into our five-star August Super Session, which was up in Honesdale.
Mm-hmm.
He had one kid who was a 6'9 sophomore, and he had another kid that was a rising junior, really thin, about 6'5", that he said is going to be something someday, but nobody really knows about him on the national stage.
Right.
His name was Carmelo Anthony. When Carmelo Anthony came to camp, there are a lot more heralded players. Maybe none so, you know, in his class, the number one player in his class at that time was at camp. His name was Lenny Cook. Well, Carmelo Anthony was an all-star, and he showed not only, you know, the tip of his talent, but you could see certain variables like his second jump and things like that that you just can't teach that scratch the surface of greatness. And lo and behold, a couple of years later, goes to Oak Hill, changes his body, and you know, and is on his way.
Wow.
Oh, that's a lot. So, Lee, let me ask you this. Now, a regular day at camp, is it a couple-a-day thing? Is it a few days? How does it work?
Five-star, the core five-star overnight experience is 3 days, 4 nights. It is physically and mentally challenging.
Wow.
It's the type of thing that you lay at night, tired, sore, haven't gone through some adversity on the court, whether it been not as successful as you hoped or willing your way through something, and where you've got to dig within yourself to get through the experience. And as you go through it and you figure out as you reach, you know, and you play against your competitive peers that some of the things that you can do easily, no longer can you do them so easily when you up the level. Now you've got to go and figure out, I need more of my game. I got to develop and get more skills. And five stars, you leave five star with three or four things that you could add into your game and you develop it into skill. You get confidence. And from there, now when you get to the next opportunity, you've now got just a host more weapons to choose from. So, but the experience, mentally and physically, is to will your way through it. And from that, you use that template that got you through it for every, you know, for whether it be your next basketball challenge or your next academic challenge. You've figured out a way to survive something very difficult and to flourish in it.
What age level are we talking here, Lee?
The young, you know, will start, the overnight kid will start as young as a really advanced 10-year-old. The majority, it'll go up through seniors in high school. The majority of kids that we see of these, you know, overnight campers will be 14, 15, 16-year-old. So it'll vary. You'll get Super Session, which is the best of the best, will be 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old kids. So it varies depending on program. But as young as 10 and 11, like a kid like Alonzo Trier, as a 10, 11-year-old, is a five-star, you know, for 3 or 4 years, and then develops into, you know, maybe a top 50 player in the country now. But, you know, that's what you see. Those that come really young are really, really phenomenal for what the Rangers. They, in essence, raise the bar from what you've ever seen a 10- or 11-year-old kid do before. And then the question, if they continue to develop, if they continue to have that hunger and love for the game, then they continue to on their way to stardom and greatness. But it's tough when you're really young, when you reach such heights. It's hard to keep up, to stay hungry and keep developing.
I want to get in to a little. I want to get into a little college round ball with you, Lee. But let me get this out of the way right up front here for a moment. Let's say I've got a 12-year-old who I think would be really great to be involved in this particular camp. You're at this particular time. Are you taking enrollment, and how would I go about doing that to get my 12-year-old involved in it?
If you go to 5starcamp.info, number 5starcamp.info. We are 90% set with our 2013 offerings, and so you could go right on there, look at the where and when that works best for the passionate player, and you can just click and register and get him on his way and signed up.
Okay. And there are, I think I read someplace there are scholarships available as well for this, or financial aid of some nature?
Yeah, we have a 5-star foundation, which is a 501c3 for those that have, you know, real financial need. We were able to develop the foundation as a way for kids who are passionate and would love to go to camp but couldn't financially find a way to do it. They go through the foundation and get that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, we're putting this information out there. We want our listeners to sit up and take notice of this. It's a terrific program. I've heard about it a lot because I know that you guys have actually been highlighted at different times during the NCAA tournament. Is that right?
Yeah, we're fortunate. You know, we play a role in development of all types and levels of players. We're fortunate that some of the guys that come through that end up going to college and end up having an opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. Generally, that number dwells into about 150 kids each year that are in the NCAA tournament or former 5-star participants.
Yeah, that's tremendous. That is tremendous. What an impact. That's fantastic. We're sitting here on January 18th, and just about 2 months from now, we're going to be staring right down the teeth of the NCAA tournament. Let's talk a little college hoops, because I love college basketball. I came from a Philadelphia college basketball school. And let me ask you, any surprises that you see right now among, say, the top 25 schools? Are there any surprises in there? Does Michigan, for instance, jump out as a surprise to you?
Not. I'll tell you what. It's sort of a twofold question. One is, we thought Michigan would be very good because they return potentially, arguably, the best backcourt in America. What we did not expect is that their freshmen would contribute it to such a level as they are doing. Mm-hmm. Take, for instance, now Michigan came in with a top 12 recruiting class,
right?
So everyone knew that there were some talented freshmen there. Mitch McGarry was highly thought of, Glenn Robinson III. What you did not expect, Nick Stauskas, who was a 5-star camper, was about 65 to 75 as far as his ranking and as far as last year. And now he comes in, and he's a starter for a top-five program and contributing, giving them another perimeter threat. Now take some of these freshmen, and I don't know if you had a chance to see the game last night, but this kid, Caris Levert, comes in, he only plays about 5 minutes in the game.
Right.
He hits arguably the biggest shot in the game. He hits a three when Minnesota's making a tremendous run. He hits a three. They've got the kid Albrecht that comes in, gets a couple of minutes. These guys are contributing on a big stage. They were 18 for 28 last night against Minnesota, the freshmen.
Yep.
18 for 28. So
yep.
Now when you talk about are they a surprise, I would say on the national level, not everyone thought they'd be good. Nobody thought that the freshmen would be able to carry as much weight as they are doing right now for this team and contribute.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, they're a surprise to me only because I didn't expect them. What, they only lost their first game the other night. I didn't expect them to go undefeated as long as they did. I mean, that was incredible to me.
Right, and the Big Ten is loaded, and there's
yep.
probably their road is incredibly tough.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about that loss real quick, okay? Let's talk about last night where they played a really tough Minnesota team. I'm very impressed by this Minnesota team. They're going to be a tough out in the tournament. They absolutely assault the offensive glass, and they have a lot of weapons. They're going to be a very difficult out. But Michigan last night, 19 assists, 12 turnovers. Against Ohio State, 8 assists, 13 turnovers.
Right.
So that's the difference. When you're talking about in conference play, your margin for error is so slim.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, as well as nationally, I mean, let's talk about on the national scene, there are no great teams. There's a group A of very good teams. There's a group B of teams that have potential to be very good.
Mm-hmm.
There's no super team like last year. There's no Kentucky out there.
That's
that
a good point.
Everyone's trying to figure out how do you go and beat this team. There's no Davids. There's all Davids, no Goliaths
yep.
in that regard. So when you look at it, this Michigan team, they don't really beat themselves all that much except for that game. Offensively, they've got a ton of weapons. And when they move the ball around, they're really tough to beat when
mm-hmm.
these freshmen hit big shots. So
mm-hmm.
as far as they go, semi-surprise, I would say. Semi-surprise, but not yet. And they're going to have some faults. There's just too many good teams to have freshmen every night be on top of their game.
Yeah. Good point. Lee, I'm going to tell you, I could sit and talk college hoops with you for the next 30 minutes. I'll tell you what I would love. I'd love to get you back on just before the tournament. And Jonathan, maybe we can work that one out, how we get Lee back on before the tournament.
Oh, absolutely.
And to go over the bracket and what have you. I could just talk this stuff for the remainder of the show. It's fantastic. Lee, one more time for our listeners out there, if they want to get in touch with Five Star, how do they go about doing that?
Well, the best way, fivestarcamp.info, numberfivestarcamp.info would be the best way. I'll give you a surprise, or the team that nobody talks about. Well, Gonzaga,
mm-hmm.
I would say the biggest surprise team this year is probably Gonzaga, because they have
yep.
a real threat to be a Final Four team.
Yep.
And nobody saw it. And the reason why is everyone knew that Gonzaga came back with some talented players, Harris, the backcourt. But no one saw that a redshirt kid in Kelly Olynyk, who was lightly contributed 2 years ago, would be a dominant post player nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And so you add that component to that team, and now, lo and behold, you've got a real case for Gonzaga to go an awful long way. So
yep.
they're probably the greatest Cinderella story. VCU is another one that no one really knows what to make, but boy, this Atlantic 10 is so tough. And VCU, last night, I mean, once again, I'm picking on this assist to turnovers. Last night, 17 assists, 5 turnovers. When they play Duke, they have 4 assists, 10 turnovers. What's the recipe? Loss. So when they take care of the basketball and they do it fairly well,
uh-huh.
and they that they defend, this is a team to really circle and keep in mind, because they are going to be something that could make a big run.
Yeah, I hear you. There are some things that surprised me up and down the list here.
Yeah, definitely a lot of surprises. Well, Lee, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to join us, and we really hope to have you back on.
Get you back
real
on,
soon
yeah.
and talk more NCAA. Mike loves it because I think he loves that more than anything, so he'll love
tournament
that.
Tournament time, man. I want to get Lee back on for tournament time.
Absolutely. Well, Lee, thank
you
so much.
It'll be my pleasure. Love to do it.
All right, great.
Have a great day, guys.
You
Take
too.
Care.
Take care. Well, Mike, I can see you're in your glory right now.
Well, I said, you know, this is right in my wheelhouse. And, boy, he brought up some great stuff. Gonzaga, I'm telling you, I could talk college hoops with bringing up VCU. You know, nobody knew who the heck Virginia Commonwealth was before last year's tournament. And here they are. They're ranked right now 22nd. Gonzaga's up there at number 8. Noticeably missing from the list. Kentucky's not in the top 25. North Carolina's not in the top 25. No, you got San Diego State of all teams ranked at number 15. This is a really, really cool year. And I got to tell you something, for all the college hoops fans out there, bracket time is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, like I said, I know you're happy. So I'm glad we could do something here for you, Mike, finally. We know we could do it, and we did it. So
all the folks over there, all my folks out there from the frat house who are listening are going, oh, no. It's that time again already?
It's that time again for Mike. Well, listen, I'm going to be a part of that bracket. So
yeah, I know. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we'll definitely get something going on that side of the bowl. So, all right, so let's talk about liars again, because there's another liar out there, Mike, by the name of Lance Armstrong. Do you know who that is?
This guy. Oh, please. Go ahead.
Well, here we go. We have years and years and years, months and months and months, weeks and weeks and weeks, and days and days and days of Lance Armstrong saying, no, I did not cheat. I am not a doper. What did he do? He even sued people.
Oh.
Right? I mean, he sued people that said he was a doper, he was a cheater and whatnot, and he took money from people.
Yeah.
And here we go now. He's on Oprah. Yes, I cheated. I doped. But not only did he do that, he took banned substances. He took blood booster EPOs. He took blood. He used transfusions.
Yeah.
Testosterone, cortisone, HTH.
Yep.
Blood dope. I mean, he did everything you could possibly think of. Now, Mike, why did he do this? Why is he coming out now to say that he did all of this stuff?
Well, you know, and it's the most that's the most incredibly confusing and confounding part of it to me personally.
Yeah.
You know, you and I have talked about this. Now, I think we've actually talked about Lance Armstrong on the air here a couple of times. I've taken some heat over the past number of years because I have always been the one asking the question, saying, wait a minute, folks, let's, you know, why are there constantly so many questions about this man? Why do these allegations keep coming up? All right. And I've had people come back to me, you know, personal friends of mine, friends who are close to me here, right here at the front house, have come back, said to me, oh, come on, you're a hater. Or, oh, come on, the guy's been blackballed. The guy won't play their game. All right. This was the line I used to hear all the time. And now he comes out on Oprah last night. And I mean, I sat and I watched a good portion of that interview last night. And I was disgusted by this man.
Yeah.
Disgusted. I saw no remorse from him whatsoever. I do not understand. After all those years, we're talking decades now, at least 15 years, where he not only, as you pointed out, denied, but he went after and sued people mm-hmm. and won cases against yeah. people that made these claims against him. All right? And he sat there last night and said, yes, it's all true. I did those things. I am disgusted by this interview.
But he showed no remorse, though.
That's the thing that really, really annoyed me. I do not understand what his game plan is here.
Yeah.
I don't get what he thinks he's doing. You know. And we've heard now, you know, well, the government's looking into it. The feds might be coming after him. You know something? I hope the hell they do.
They should. They should. They should burn this guy at the stake. Listen, one of his quotes last night on Oprah, and he said it. I'm going to say it, and I'm going to quote it. I went and looked up the definition of a cheat. And the definition is to gain an advantage on a rival or foe. I didn't view it that way. I viewed it as a level playing field. Seriously. No remorse from this guy whatsoever. So what was the entire basis of him going on to tell everybody he was a doper? Everybody knew it.
I don't know if I agree with you completely there, Jonathan. I don't know if everybody knew it. I think everybody knew the allegations were there. There were some that I think wanted to put their head in the sand and say, oh, no, it's not that way at all. He's a victim, okay? And then there were others like myself who kind of sat on the fence going, whoa, wait a minute, where there's smoke, there's fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, if the allegations come out and you clear yourself once, you clear yourself twice, okay, then it should be done with.
Yeah.
But this guy cleared himself multiple times, apparently,
mm-hmm.
and yet the allegations just kept coming back. And to me, you can't have that kind of circumstance occurring without there being something to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wouldn't necessarily say that everybody knew that he did. I think that there were some, like myself, many of us who suspected that it was true. And then there were others that just said, no, it can't be true. It can't be true. Look at what the guy's come back from. He battled back from cancer. I mean, here we go. Isn't this a Manti Te'o story all over again? You know, oh, don't we feel bad for him? Don't we want to root him on? You know, I mean,
is but, you know what? Let me ask you this, too. Now, is there a possibility, because I think there is, that everything he did to his body could have propelled the cancer and could have made it really come out into the form that it came out in, right?
Well, I'm going to tell you.
Transfusions and everything he was putting in his body, if you could do it with steroids, you could do it with anything else. There is a big, big chance that he got cancer for all the stuff he did to his body.
You know, I'm going to tell you, you make an excellent point, and I hadn't really even thought about it until I sat and I watched the Oprah interview last night. When he was talking about his cocktail, he had a special formulated cocktail that was brewed up into these transfusions. Now, folks, understand what this is. They're going to remove his blood from his body and recycle it back in with all this stuff in it.
Yeah.
That is a very dangerous thing to do. And you bring up an excellent point, and I was sitting thinking about that as I'm hearing him go through and tell the process of this.
Yeah.
Where he had this, as he pointed out, as he said, almost a patented hybrid cocktail that was developed just for him.
Yeah.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
You know what? Especially if people are still sticking up for him. I mean, I'm sorry. That is just ridiculous. You know, it's. You could stick up for this guy after all he did, and now he's coming out after taking money from people, suing people, blasting people, and yet still stand up for him and say, hey, leave the guy alone. You're out of your freaking mind.
Well, I'm sure that I'm sure if there's anybody out there today that is still sticking up for him, I'm sure they wouldn't want to do this. But I'm going to tell you right now, if there's somebody out there in our listening ship that can justify to me that this guy should be vindicated in some way or another, 347-237-5373. You better call me up and let me know. Now, they're probably going to be scared to do so, but I'm telling you, I can't believe that there would be anybody in America today that could sit here and tell me that that Lance Armstrong is a hero or that he's a terrific guy.
Yeah, because he's not. He's far from it. USA DA Chief Travis Tigert came out last night as well, and he threw out some comments after watching everything, and he goes, tonight Lance Armstrong finally acknowledged that his cycling career was built on a powerful combination of doping and deceit. His admission that he doped throughout his career is a small step in the right direction, but if he is sincere in his desire to correct his past mistakes, he will testify under oath about the full extent of his doping activities.
Well, but what does that do now?
Exactly. What does that do? To me, well, I think if he does that, that gives the opening for the people that he sued and took money from to put lawsuits against him now, turn around, and take him for all he's worth.
Well, I think there was a bit of a guised, a little bit, if you listen to the interview from last night, there was a little bit of a guised, almost kind of threat that he's ready to throw a whole lot of other people underneath the bus.
Yeah.
So, you know. Would that be his venue if I go and I testify? This is going to be my venue now to get out my black book and I'm just going to start crossing names off? You know, hey, if I'm going to go down, then all you guys are going to go with me.
Yeah, well, basically that's what he was doing.
I think so. I think, that, you know, and if that's the motivation, that's even more despicable, in my opinion, than denying it for 15 years.
Yeah.
And denying it as vehemently as he did.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, you're going to hear a lot more stuff come out. Just like the Manti Te'o story, you're going to hear a lot of stuff come out about Lance Armstrong now. I think it's going to take a little bit of a backseat to the Te'o story because nobody even cares about Lance Armstrong anymore.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, but you know something, and I got to give it to Sidekick because he made the comment last night because we were talking about, obviously, as I pointed out, we were talking about the Manti Te'o story last night, and Sidekick brought up and he said, you know something, here we are talking about Manti Te'o, and I think the bigger story is you know, you got Lance Armstrong. And a very, you know, kind of very similar. You could juxtapose the two stories going on in tandem right now. You could really juxtapose these and draw a great deal of comparison between the two of them. And yet I kind of agree with Sidekick that really I think there's more to the Lance Armstrong story, and it's more deserving of talk and of discussion,
yeah,
and analysis than the Manti story. Because the Manti story might turn out to be nothing more than just some innocent, immature kid getting himself in over his head.
Mm-hmm.
The Lance Armstrong story is not that at all.
No. And there's going to be more coming out. He was even talking about the people he sued yesterday on the program. And they were talking about M. O'Reilly, who is the masseuse for the United States Postal Service team that he was on, as well as London Sunday Times reporter David Walsh. And Oprah came right out and says, you know, what do you want to say to M. O'Reilly? And he says, well, she's definitely one of the people I want to apologize. She was one of the people that got run over and got bullied.
Yeah.
Oprah simply asked him, did you sue her? And he goes, to be honest, we sued so many people I don't even know. I'm sure we did. Disgusting.
Oh, gosh.
Disgusting. That's all I got to say about Lance Armstrong. He's a disgusting human being.
Well, you know, watching it last night, you know, I think I'm like a lot. Look, we're human beings, and we're forgiving people. And I think that if he had come on last night, and if we saw somebody that sat there, oh, maybe even openly wept and said, you know, look, I don't know what to tell you. I was a dumbass, okay?
Yeah.
I think we would have been, you know, we have an easy way of forgiving things. And what I saw last night was not that. What I saw was a man that was still, in many respects, very, very vehement about, while he was admissive, he's admitting everything. He was still none the. I saw no remorse.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, we got a little bit more news on the whole Manti Te'o story that just came out, Mike. A friend of that, Renea Tuasasopo,
yes,
said that he called a church friend in early December crying and admitted to duping the Heisman finalist. The friend was telling Outside the Lines, you know, today on ESPN, or excuse me, I think it was last night. And, you know, basically the friend saying that from what Tuasasopo told him, that he was behind everything and Te'o had no part of it whatsoever. So, like I said,
we're coming out,
and I'm sure the next story is going to say that Te'o was involved with it. So,
well, what we need to hear from is Manti Te'o, and to be, with all due respect, Manti, if you're listening, or if somebody is that knows him, I do not think your venue should be an Oprah show. I think you need to come out and have an open press conference.
I think you need to address it that way. If he goes on Oprah and gets paid for this now. But you know what the other thing that bothers me too is that I don't care what's coming out now. It doesn't mean anything unless there's a name to the source. Because all this anonymous crap.
Right.
Well, I can't tell you who the friend is because I'm not allowed to. So we're supposed to take the word of some anonymous source, some anonymous report, over factual evidence that people like Deadspin came out with.
Well, I agree with you. And where I was going with it too was the report that you just brought up that you said was on Outside the Lines. Is that where it was?
Yes.
This could be a situation where you've got individuals around Manti who are now going to circle the wagons, and we're going to deflect any possibility of this being on Manti whatsoever. You know, we need to hear from Manti, and we need to hear from him in an objective environment.
Yeah.
And frankly, I don't think an Oprah show or some other type of news program is an objective venue.
No, because he's going to get paid for it. Of course. Exactly. It's freaking ridiculous, man. I would love to find these people and just slap them across the face, man. Man, would that be great. All right, well, listen, let's curb the whole talking about liars and cheats and whatnot, and let's talk something that we're a little excited about this weekend, Mike. NHL. Hockey is going to start in 2013, and it starts Saturday with some really, really good games, Mike.
Yeah, it's starting up big time, isn't it?
Yeah. But before we get into that, we just want to send out a very good luck, Congratulations to Red Wings forward Tomas Hellstrom, who's retiring on Tuesday. Yeah.
Right.
530 career points for Hellstrom. Very good career. Also, but before we get in that, we joined by a caller, and it's our buddy Big Joe from the Bronx.
Yep.
What's up, Joe?
Man, how's everything?
Hey, Joe, you haven't heard from me in a while, man.
Yeah, man, been a little on the busy side. I apologize for that.
No, that's all right. That's all right. We have
been listening, I've been listening.
You should apologize.
No, we know. Hey, don't listen to him. Don't listen to him. We know you listen all the time, Joey. We appreciate it.
Exactly. You know, I'm a loyal fan.
Absolutely.
Yep.
The whole Manti situation, Lance Armstrong, disgraceful. I'm going to make it very short and brief because the main thing I want to talk about is tomorrow night, drop the puck. Let's go, Rangers. That is the one and only thing that I'm thinking about right now. NFL playoffs, all of that, it all takes a back seat. You know, the whole lockout pissed me off. You guys know that, but I'm a diehard hockey fan. I shared what made me a big hockey fan with you, Mike, on Facebook.
Yes.
You know, hockey is a sport where the players connect with the fans more, even though one would not think it after the lockout. You know, this whole mess.
I know.
You know what? They connect during the season, but when it comes to lockout and offseason, they don't connect with anybody.
Exactly.
It is the strangest anomaly. It's the strangest anomaly to me. I don't get me wrong. I'm an NHL fan, and I have been for 38, 39 years. But it is the strangest anomaly to me. You can have a lockout in Major League Baseball. You can have a lockout and strike or whatever in the NFL, and everybody is up in arms. But in hockey, everybody comes flocking back in record numbers.
It's a family mentality. The hockey fan. You know, when I go to games at the Garden, granted, when I'm at Citi Field, Met fans, you know, with the Jet fans at MetLife Stadium and whatnot, going further back, the Meadowlands, I don't want to call it Giants Stadium. But, you know, fam, we're all family when you root for a certain team.
Yeah.
But with the hockey fan, and you know this, Mike, because you're a Flyer fan, and Flyer fans are equally as passionate about them as we Ranger fans are with our team. It's intimate family-like get-togetherness with the fans.
Yeah.
And the players connect with that during the season. You know, that's why hockey players, more than any other player in any sport, are easily approachable when you meet them. You know, they talk to you. They don't look down on the fans. So there's that sense of connection. And that's why I knew when once the lockout ended, I knew without a shadow of a doubt I would be amped and just eagerly anticipating the opening face-off for the upcoming season. And like I said, I absolutely cannot wait for tomorrow night. I can't wait for Sunday night, MSG. I plan on going over there. I'm just pumped up, especially when you got a team that's a favorite to win the Stanley Cup. You know, on paper, the Rangers are a legitimate player to win the Cup, and that makes it all the more exciting. So I can't wait for tomorrow night. Let's get the puck dropped and – you know, good luck to all the teams out there, but I want my Rangers to win that cup. And my prediction for the Stanley Cup Finals, New York Rangers versus San Jose Sharks.
That's very interesting because I think that's pretty close to what I read just yesterday in SI. I think that's pretty close. I'd have to go back and check that.
SI, they're usually wrong, so it's going to be somebody else.
I think they picked the Penguins, actually.
Did they?
Of course they say
the Penguins,
man.
You know,
everybody says the Penguins.
No, I thought they had the Rangers up at number one.
Okay.
I thought they had the Rangers number one. Are you going to be at Madison Square Garden tomorrow?
Yes, from what I'm hearing, the Rangers and every entrance for the MSG, they're going to have former Rangers alumni there to greet the fans. They're giving out T-shirts and posters. But MSG has also been quoted as saying they're going to have a few extra surprises, but they don't want to reveal what those surprises are.
Yes, Dancing Larry will be there.
But that'll,
Dancing
that'll
Larry
only
will be,
be
there. Definitely he will be there.
Yes, Larry will be there.
That'll only be for about 10 days. The NHL will do that for about 10 days, and then it'll be back to normal.
But you see, with teams like the Rangers and the Flyers, they don't have to do it as much because they're going to sell out their buildings. It's the New Jerseys of the world.
Oh,
it's the Islanders of the world. It's the you know, the Floridas of the world, they have to bend over backwards to lure their fans back.
The Flyers had 18,000 last night for an open practice at Wells Fargo. 18,000 that were there.
Yep.
That'll probably be more than the home game.
Yeah.
That'll probably be more than the game against the Penguins tomorrow.
Yep.
All right. Well, Joey, as always, man, You're the man. Thanks for calling in. And I guarantee you, extra surprise tomorrow, you'll get to meet Dancing Larry and rub his head for luck, man.
There you go.
That'll be your extra surprise, man. Thanks for calling in, man. We hope to hear from you soon.
Love you, Joey, but I'm rooting for the Bruins.
Oh, here we go. That's the rivalry begins.
Hey, you know what, Joey? Calling on Monday.
I will.
When the Flyers will be what, 0-1, or are they playing Sunday too? So it'll be 0-2 by Monday. So
yeah, they play Sunday, I think, as well.
Yeah, they play Buffalo on Sunday. All right, Joey.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joey.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of the top games then from Saturday.
There you go.
You know, Pittsburgh at Philadelphia, very good game. Rangers at Boston, very good game. You know, there are some really good games. You know, Detroit, St. Louis, Phoenix at Dallas, Anaheim at Vancouver. I mean, yeah, we're going to have some good games. So.
The Islanders. Washington, Tampa Bay could be interesting as well. Carolina, Florida.
Tampa Bay.
Oh, Detroit, St. Louis.
Detroit, St. Louis is going to be a real good game.
Yes.
St. Louis is actually my pick from the Western Conference to go to the Stanley Cup.
Really?
Yeah.
St. Louis is?
Yeah, St. Louis is.
Oh, interesting.
Short
interesting.
Season, I think that's going to be a highlight. Seems like St. Louis.
I would agree. Yeah, I think a short season could help St. Louis, and I brought that up to Sidekick. Of course, he had his fingers in his ears last night, so he wasn't listening to me. He didn't want to hear about hockey.
Well, you know what? When you guys are watching it at the frat house, man, just kick him out.
Well, listen, he's not going to come and watch hockey this year.
He'll be outside trying to mess with your cable, man. That's what's going to happen.
That's what he'll be doing, because he's been known to do that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's Sidekick, so.
But no, like, you're right. We have a great lineup. And I would suspect, and I'm looking down the network listing here, you know, NBC, NBC, NHL Network.
Yep. Is it going to be on TV?
My suspicion would be we are going to see hockey all day long.
Oh, and Sunday.
Sunday.
A lot of games on Sunday as well. NBC, NHL Network, NBC Sports Network. So there's going to be a lot of games.
That's okay. We got football Sunday. Okay. Football's not over yet.
Oh, no. Listen, games are on at 7 o'clock, man. Football, you know, you watch that during the day.
Evening games.
In your house, man. Come on. You're not going to have hockey on.
Not during football, man. Not during football, not until the football season's over. See, we don't do that sort of thing. I mean, when football's on, it's football, you know, not basketball, not hockey. If football's on, it's football.
Yeah, well, you know, well, weird in Philadelphia, man. We say it all the time.
Oh, listen to you.
Listen, man, I'll have both football and hockey on.
Well, yeah, well, I mean,
that's the way I roll.
Where we can accommodate it, we do that. But
15 TVs. You only need two TVs for two games. Come on, man.
That's true. We do have 15 here at the frat house. That's
great stuff. Well, episode 54, now in the wraps. 54 episodes, Mike. Amazing.
54? Is that what it is?
54 today. Yep.
Wow.
So just want to thank everybody for making Fan Junkies Radio one of the fastest growing internet radio shows going.
Wow. Incredible. Yeah, it's incredible. Yep. Hey, don't forget, too, tomorrow, 3 o'clock, I'll be on with Frat House.
We also want to announce that press release went out today. We are in a long-term deal partnership with Blanchett Sports Holdings, so you'll be hearing a lot about Women's Indoor Football League, the National Baseball League, PCW, which is a professional wrestling league that they're doing that we're bringing up here to Philadelphia. We're just a long partnership with BSH. We're going to be doing radio for them, video, writing, whatnot. So that's going to be something for everybody to look forward to in the next few months. Great stuff.
Yep.
So once again, as always, for Mike McShane, I'm Jonathan Ragus, and we'll see you all Monday.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Maybe you're a 49ers fan in Jacksonville or a Jets fan in Houston, and you're looking to connect with fellow fans from hundreds or thousands of miles away. Look no further than FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net is a social networking site dedicated to fans of every team and every league. Connect with baseball, football, basketball, and hockey fans from throughout the country and throughout the world. Get the latest news, take polls, and interact in live chats on game day. And best of all, it's absolutely free to join. Sign up today at FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net, where sports meets social networking.